From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. First of all, happy birthday to Coast guest, Dr. Robin Falkov. I hope your significant other, Dr. Richard C. Hoagland, took you out wining and dining. Happy birthday, Robin. In a moment, who's haunting the White House? That's right, we're going to talk about ghosts with Jeff Belanger. And next hour, the pyramids and the Pentagon with Nick Redfern. Here's what's happening. Well, the feature story at coasttocoastam.com, you've got to take a look at this crop formation. It is staggering. The latest intricate crop circle to appear overnight in a British wheat field. The mysterious pattern resembles the ancient Tibetan Buddhist symbol of the endless knot, which is a complex loop of lines and circles used to illustrate the eternal flow of time. The symbol has many meanings, but because it has no beginning and no end, many people who follow the religion say it represents the wisdom of Buddha. How they made this and who made this totally out of this world. The Air Force has said an attempt to fly its hypersonic jet Waverider at Mach 6, that's 3,600 miles an hour, it failed. The unmanned aircraft had been designed to fly at six times the speed of sound after being dropped from a B-52 bomber, and then it was going to just take off. But officials said that the faulty control fin prevented it from starting its supersonic combustion ramjet engine, and the craft was lost. Now, this is the second time in a row the Air Force has been unable to test this kind of technology. Astronomers have seen a very huge galaxy cluster doing what until now has only been theorized to happen, making brand new stars. Most galaxy clusters, now the largest structures in the universe, are red and dead, having long since produced all the stars that they can make. Researchers say that they have evidence now that the enormous Phoenix cluster makes 740 stars a year. A company called Bumbo International is voluntarily recalling 4 million Bumbo baby seats after scores of injuries, including skull fractures. It's a South African company. The Consumer Product Safety Commission made the announcement. Since a 2007 recall, 50 incidents have been reported in which babies fell while the seats were in a raised position. 19 of the incidents included skull fractures. The seats were made in South Africa, as I mentioned, sold at Babies R Us, Sears, Target, Toys R Us, USA Babies, Walmart, and other stores, and online as well, selling between August of 2003 and August of 2012. Well, here's some good news for people looking for an excuse to munch on a couple of squares of chocolate after a review showed that the treat could reduce blood pressure. An analysis of 20 studies showed that eating dark chocolate daily resulted in a slight reduction in blood pressure. The recession that ended 3 years ago this summer has been followed by the feeblest economic recovery since the Great Depression. Since World War II, 10 U.S. recessions have been followed by a recovery that lasted at least 3 years. An Associated Press analysis has shown that just by any other measure, the one that began in June of 2009 is the weakest. Mish Shedlock with us, registered investment advisor. Well, it hasn't bounced back yet, Mish, has it?
No, it hasn't, and we've talked about that, and we've predicted that. And I just have to ask you, though, George, do you believe any of these reports that come out from the government on anything? Well, for example, retail sales yesterday came out, and supposedly they were up. Yet I'm looking at a report here from straight from the controller of the California State Office, John Chang. It came out, and total revenues year over year for the month of July. Now, these are actual dollars collected coming into the state of California are down 10%. Sales tax collections, listen to this, are down 40%. 40% year over year.
That's huge. Well, you know, I make my analysis, Mitch.
Sales are up. It's amazing.
I just go out and talk to people. You know, you go to a restaurant. If the restaurant's slow and normally they're very busy, you know there's something wrong. And if it's happening on a regular basis, there's something very, very wrong. if you go to a shopping center and you find that you can get a parking space when you couldn't 2 years ago or whenever, you know there's something wrong. That's where I get a lot of my information.
Yeah, 40%. I mean, this is shocking. Now, actually, someone pointed out to me that California had some sort of temporary, you know, sales tax hike. Okay, I went in and I stripped that out, and that would account for 11% of it. Yet, even versus projections, and the state of California, you know, has to know that this happened, they're still down 33.5%. over what they projected to get, and 40% year over year. So if this is happening in California, California can't be the only state this is happening. They make these projections based off of same store sales. Well, same store sales, George, don't account for all these small little businesses going out of businesses that no longer have sales. So if we lose a chain of bookstores, then people stop buying at that chain and the sales at the other ones go up. And I think that's what's happening. I think we're going to see a massive downward revision in these sales. And we had sales down 3 months in a row, which we've not seen for the longest time, and actually 26 out of the last 27 times we've seen 3 months in a row sales, the economy was in recession or heading there.
You got it. Mitch, thank you so much. And again, they're saying the economic recovery so far, the weakest since World War II. In San Diego, a Logan Heights resident was injured when she slipped while taking a shower in her apartment. Then she fell out a window and plunged about 15 feet to the bottom of an air and light shaft in the middle of the building. She was rescued by emergency crews. She'll be okay, but scared to death. A story in the news at coasttocoastam.com. Legend has it that the Loch Ness Monster was first sighted in the 6th century by an Irish monk while preaching by the lake. Now a Scottish sailor who has spent the last 26 years of his life searching for the elusive creature says he has the best picture yet of Nessie. We've got that at coasttocoastam.com in the news. But Steve Alton holds a bachelor's degree in physical education, noted author, of course, and has written a lot about the Loch Ness Monster. What do you think of this one, Steve?
Good evening, George. I thought the video was more impressive than the still pictures. The video shows that there's definitely something that's a biologic out there. But having spent a few years researching Loch Ness and speaking to cryptozoologists and scientists, and also studying what else is in there besides what could be the creature, I'm pretty convinced that we're looking at a sturgeon.
Which is a huge what, fish?
It's a huge fish. They migrate in the early summers from the sea into rivers and lakes. Loch Ness has a lot of sturgeon in it. In fact, 3 weeks ago on July 25th, a monstrous white sturgeon measuring 12 feet 4 inches and weighing an estimated 1,100 pounds was caught in British Columbia. So these things grow pretty big, and it just looks like it moves like a sturgeon, which almost looks from the dorsal aspect like a shark.
And you've said that you believe Nessie is a huge eel. You still hold that?
I still hold that. All the evidence indicates that it's a huge anguilla eel, female. They grow very big, and it just makes a lot more sense than some of the other rumors.
Steve, what are you working on now? You're always doing something.
I've got a book coming out in May called The Omega Project, which is about takes place in the near future in 2028. Following the great die-off that happens after we run out of oil. And a scientist is sent on a 30-day mission to be cryogenically frozen, and he wakes up 12 million years later.
All right, Steve, thank you so much. Steve's website, by the way, stevealton.com, linked up at our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. And if you want to follow us on Facebook and Twitter, simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, click the top there where the icons are, and then follow along. I read today a children's book. I know, you're probably saying, what? What'd you do? No, no. This one's called Who's Haunting the White House? It's by Jeff Belanger, and we're going to talk with Jeff about this. This is an amazing story. Jeff's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Jeff Belanger is obsessed with the unexplained and leads a very haunted life. He's been fascinated with the supernatural since the age of 10. And over the years, Jeff has interviewed hundreds of people about their experiences with an approach to the subject that makes the supernatural accessible to a lot of people. He's the writer or researcher for Ghost Adventures. It's a series on the Travel Channel and hosts the online talk show, 30 Odd Minutes. And he's got his latest workout, Who's Haunting the White House? I like this, Jeff. Tell me about the idea behind this.
Well, George, the idea came years ago when I called the White House and said, hey, I want to do a book about the ghost there. And they said, yeah, we're just not interested. But I said, you know, I think, But then I said, you know, I think we can use ghosts as an innovative way to teach history. And they said, go on. And I think I was onto something. And so, really, I was intrigued. I'm a lover of history, and the White House just speaks volumes about history, legend, lore, and you know, our political background, and really represents the United States unlike any other building.
Well, and it's a history book for children, but it doesn't scare the daylights out of them.
No, and that's the point. You know, a lot of times ghostly experiences are frightening only because we don't understand what's going on. But the reality is most of them are benign. They're just there. Of course, if you see something like that, it can be very frightening. But the reality is lots and lots of people are having these experiences, including presidents, first families, and the people who work at that historic building.
Let's go through some of the hauntings at the White House. How long has it been going on?
Well, the earliest reports go back well into the 1800s. The first documentation, really, where someone wrote down about the ghosts came in October of 1863. Mary Todd Lincoln wrote in a letter to her half-sister, Emily Todd Helm, that she sees her son, Willie, who died in the White House. Willie died during the Lincoln presidency of a typhoid-like disease. And she said, he comes to me with his uncle, Alec, and it gives me great peace to know that he's there. Now, Mary Todd Lincoln is certainly a colorful historical character, and you know, someone could say this is just a distraught mother, which I would accept as well. But then, decades later, July 26, 1911, a military aide named Archibald Butt writes to in a letter to his wife that servants of the White House claim there's a little boy haunting the building, and they're spooked by it. And that's interesting because the only boy that had died there was Willie Lincoln. And so this is a second mention almost 50 years later, you know, after the fact. So kind of interesting that it comes up again. But Mary Todd believed the building was haunted. She held seances there, not just to contact her son, but also other spirits in the building. And they've continued quite steadily over the last 150 years.
Have there been a number of guests at the White House who have witnessed ghosts there, Jeff?
Yeah, absolutely. Winston Churchill was staying at the White House, and there's a great story where he heard a knock at the door and claims that Abe Lincoln was standing there. And I think the quote Churchill gave was, Mr. President, you seem to have me at a disadvantage being in his pajamas. And the Lincoln ghost comes up again and again, and guests often report it. The Lincoln bedroom is a very prestigious room to you know, stay in if you're a guest at the White House. And it was never actually his bedroom, of course. This was originally the executive office long before they added the east and west wings to the building. And so so it kind of makes sense that his spirit would appear there again and again.
Are the hauntings there, are they scary? Are they serious, or are they just kind of frolicky and fun?
You know, I think I would call them serious in the fact that they're, you know, this is American history that's literally happening again and again. Although I know Ronald Reagan claimed that his dog would be petrified of the Lincoln bedroom and bark wildly and not go in it. That's an animal. And I know Hillary Clinton mentioned that the place is creepy, and certainly other first family members have said that they've gotten the chills here and there. But the reality is it just seems to be history demanding to be remembered. And I remember seeing an interview with George Bush the senior when he said it was the first time he had to put some troops in harm's way. And he talked about how he was struggling with the decision, and then he started to think about Abraham Lincoln and what Lincoln went through, and how Lincoln had the most difficult presidency of all of them, you know, a nation at war with itself, his son dying while he was in office, and of course paying the ultimate price, getting assassinated, you know, as president. And he said, it just gave me peace to know, you know, he had it tougher. And it makes me wonder if Lincoln's still hanging around, or if all of our modern presidents need him, need his spirit around,
to help them through what must be just a tremendously difficult job.
Well, you know, Lincoln is very hot now in Hollywood. I mean, Hollywood has got him all over the place.
I know, he's killing vampires.
He's killing vampires. They're doing stories about him. I don't know why the newfound interest in Lincoln. Why?
Is there anything that guy can't do, you know? I think, again, he's just the gold standard for presidents as far as giving it all, his family, his life, everything. And when you think back again, it always amazes me. You see any president take office and they're young and chipper and eager. 4 years or 8 years later, their hair is white. You know,
they look exhausted.
They do. They really do. So, you know, I can tell you, certainly having really examined the presidents, been to the White House, interviewed the staff, it's not a job I would ever want. I can only imagine what they go through. And I think we're just still enamored with this golden age representation of Lincoln. You know, better, you know, difficult times for the country, but just this man that could handle it all. And we never forgot that all these years later.
They age fast. Tom was just telling me at dinner tonight, Jeff, he said, have you seen the comparison between Hillary Clinton now and when she was the first lady? And
oh, sure.
I mean, she looks exhausted. I mean, just haggard, tired. I mean, it's got to be a brutal job.
George, it's why I won't run for president. I enjoy
smart
my
guy
look too much.
And you make too much money doing what you do, Jeff, right?
Right, yes. I couldn't handle the pay cut.
That's right. You're making millions with this children's book, aren't you?
Yes, at least millions.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about this haunting reported in the East Room of the White House.
This is fascinating because when you look back through history, you learn so much studying ghosts. In the East Room, when John and Abigail Adams moved in, and they were the first residents of the White House, second president, first residents, it was, wasn't completed while Washington was still president, they moved in, and there was no furniture in the building. There was no money for it, and the Adamses were not going to move down from Braintree because they knew this was a temporary residence at best. So Abigail Adams would hang her laundry in the East Room because there's nothing in there. Why, right? Why go outside and brave the elements when you've got this big empty room? And years later, people would report smelling soap, hearing kind of the sloshing of water and fabric, and seeing a figure hanging laundry. And so we tie it back to this event that took place in the very first days of the White House. And it's almost like, you know, time replaying itself in that building. It's an incredible place.
Is it a time slip?
Yeah, time slips are really, it's where I'm going next with this. And you start to wonder, cases like that, because what many people have called a residual haunting, a movie that tends to play over and over again, makes me wonder, is that the case, or are we literally bumping into a different time? And so for me, the difference between a ghost experience and a time slip, a ghost experience is you're in your modern environment and you see something that doesn't belong, a woman in Victorian dress or something like that, a man in an old-fashioned top hat walk by. But then there's a time slip where you don't belong. You are in an environment that's completely different. And this is fascinating to me because the more you learn about time, the more you see that it's more a mental construct than it's not a force in the universe at all. It's just it's something that might be happening all at once. And it's our consciousness that puts it into order. So maybe some of these ghost experiences could be explained as time literally bumping into another time, then bumping into now bumping into then. And it's intriguing to me to wonder what might actually be happening there.
You think time travel could be possible?
I think it's happening right now. I think it's happening right now to a lot of people. Not, you know, so much dialing up a machine and going to a specific date.
Or under their control. Maybe it just happens.
Exactly. I don't think, maybe there's a few people that might be able to control this, you know, through consciousness, but I think it's happening to an awful lot of people. I've been talking to folks who are seeing scenes that are out of place, who are seeing even futuristic scenes where, you know, something that looks like it could be centuries or even millennia into the future. It's happening. And I don't think it's just a delusion. I think it's literally a glimpse for some reason that we can't yet explain of another time or possibly even another part of the multiverse, which I really believe is happening out there.
All right, Jeff, stay with us. We're going to come back with you in just a moment as we talk a little bit more about this time slip and time travel as well. We'll get your take on that. And also we continue to talk about who's haunting the White House as well. Plus, phone calls just ahead with Jeff Belanger on Coast to Coast AM. And his websites, they're there for you, too. We'll be back. And welcome back. We're with Jeff Belanger. Jeff, what other time slips have you looked at or investigated?
You know, there's been a few stories now that I'm checking out, but there's one in Colorado that's intrigued me. It happened in 2009 to a gentleman who contacted me. He told me a story about how he had just closed on a house and went out to celebrate with his wife for dinner. And they went into this old restaurant that dates back to the 1880s. And he said he opened the door for his wife. She walks in. He steps in behind her, and suddenly she disappears. And he looks around at the bar and realizes, wait a minute. Something's really wrong. There's no electric lights. It's all now candles and gas flames. And he noticed someone at the bar. And what's intriguing is the man turned around, looked at him. He said they locked eyes. He was looked up and down, kind of like a quick nod and back to his drink. He noticed all the details. Everything seemed out of place. He said this whole event lasted 3, maybe 4 seconds, a couple of steps in, and suddenly he was back in modern day. Electric lights. His wife was there again. Everything was modern. And he said it wasn't frightening, and I think he believes, based on the sidearm that was on the man sitting at the bar, he's kind of a gun expert, that it would have been around 1880 to 1890 based on the pistol he saw. Now, what's intriguing is that he made contact with that time period. It wasn't just witnessing a scene where it just, you know, appeared and disappeared. He interacted with it. He was the person out of place. And those are the kind of stories I'm looking for. Those are the kind of experiences I'm trying to document, because it's literally seeing and interacting with a time that doesn't belong in our modern time. He doesn't know how it happened, but he's begging for it to happen again. And I think some people, through just a slip of consciousness, are able to literally slide in to another time period. And 3 seconds, you know, a few seconds seems to be about the norm. But I'm wondering if some people can do it even longer, even to the point of actually affecting the timeline.
Does that explain some of these shadow people sightings?
You know, maybe it could. The more I started going down this rabbit hole, you start to wonder, are they haunting us or are we haunting them? You know, who's in whose territory here? And when we see something that we would call a ghost, could they have just slipped into our time, even sometimes interacting and then slipped back? Could a shadow figure be just, you know, someone glimpsing our time and then they're gone? Maybe, you know, maybe it could be.
I had the opportunity with Tom to go to the Eastern State Penitentiary in Pennsylvania area with Jeff not too long ago. What an old, spooky place, Jeff.
Yeah, I know. Boy, nothing like doing prison time with me, huh?
Oh.
That was cool, though. It was great taking you guys around and just, you know, we are walking back in time. We're going back in time centuries into this old penitentiary, imagining what life must have been like and tuning into, you know, like we talked about when we were walking through that old prison, you know, imagine this is it. You're being brought in here and you're going to be in here for decades or maybe the rest of your life. This is now your life. What that must have felt like for these people.
Let's take some calls here east of the Rockies. We go to George in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hey, George, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good to have you with us.
Very interesting show, Jeff. I like your ideas. There is one thing I am kind of curious about. I'm sure you probably thought about it already, but if, let's say, there's not really any reports that I know of anybody from the past seeing somebody like us from the future, you know, really, that's been documented, or even like, let's say now today, 2001, if somebody from, I don't know, 2100, we're not seeing anybody from the future that would possibly come back. So the time slip idea is kind of interesting, but there's no real reports of anything like that I know of. Have you heard of anything like that?
You know, there's a few things that turn up again and again. If you flip to the Bible in Ezekiel, there's a very detailed description of what's described as a ship. You know, by all accounts, it's unlike any other description in the Bible. It's described, you know, wheel within a wheel, and a very technical description. The only other technical description like that is Noah's Ark in the whole Bible, and it got me wondering. You know, if time travel becomes possible. at some future point, why wouldn't that craft want to go back to the time of Ezekiel and see what the heck this thing was that was so technical? And then I wonder if that craft was fulfilling, you know, almost like this causal time loop and becoming the very thing that was described in the Bible. There's in ancient art, we see cave drawings where you see people with helmets and things like that. Some have called them ancient aliens. I'm wondering if maybe what others have called ancient aliens could be people from the future who were smart enough to know, I don't want to carry any germs back there, and I don't want to bring any ancient germs forward. And they were depicted in cave drawings and things like that. Stuff does turn up here and there, but it's so brief that I think it's often described more as a ghost experience than anything else. And so it's got me wondering. I'm not certain. I'm putting out a big what if here, but some of the evidence seems to point toward time slip, as opposed to, you know, possible ghost or other paranormal phenomena.
Back to the White House for a moment, Jeff. Do you think that the documentation of these sightings, that does anybody have this on video by any chance, any of them?
You know, if they do, they're not talking. And here's the funny thing. When I was talking to some of the Secret Service at the White House, incredible place, on the first floor, anyway, there's a Secret Service agent that tends to stand in just about every room as the tours are going through. And I realized, you know, there's really no hidden cameras. And then you remember, this is someone's house. Not only is it someone's house, it's a place where foreign heads of state come for meetings. And so the security is airtight all around the building. But as far as hidden cameras, and I'm sure there are some here and there, but there's not supposed to be, you know, cameras on when you know, there are meetings and things like that. People don't want to be spied on. So if they have them, they're not really coming forward. However, the staff were very forthcoming. People that have worked there for a while to talk about their ghost experiences. They have no they don't play politics there. If you work for the building, there's about 100 employees, the cooks, the cleaning crew, the butlers, the groundskeepers. These folks have a job no matter which political party's in power, and they have no issue with talking about it because, you know, quite frankly, I don't think they can be fired, you know, short of committing some kind of felony. These people are reliable. They've been drug tested, psychologically screened, background checked, 8 ways to Sunday. If they said they saw something, to me, that's as reliable a witness as we're ever going to get.
Who did your very colorful illustrations, Jeff?
Rick Powell, a really talented guy. I love how he just brought these ghosts to life and yet respected the history as well.
Let's go to Dante in the United Kingdom on our Skype line. Dante, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Hi.
Yeah, I was wondering whether I could share a time anomaly experience.
Sure. Well, I'd love to hear it.
My first question is, let me share the experience first.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I used to go out of body quite often. And once this strange portal appeared in my bedroom, and I remember as a kid being quite fascinated about it because I could hear sounds of fireworks coming through this portal. So I jumped through it. I literally just jumped through it. I decided to take the leap. And strangely enough, I ended up in this strange environment where I was in a department store. I went up an escalator and I played on a console. Now, on that console was a Game Boy. And the Game Boy had not been invented yet. This was back in 1985, I think. I was about 6 or 7 years old. So I was I definitely distinctly remember playing on this Game Boy. And the interesting thing, Jeff, is that about 15 years later, I relived that very day. I found myself in a place in abroad. I went into this department store. Things started just to appear very familiar. I went up this escalator and I was thinking, oh my gosh, this is really strange. And right before me at the top of the escalator was a games console, which was a Game Boy. And I went over to it and it was like I was in a strange trance that for about half an hour or so, I was reliving that exact experience that I'd had as a child.
Very cool.
I wanted to hear your opinion on that. And my second question is, So my first question, should I say, is do you think there's a correlation between one's energetic state and time anomalies? Because there was a time when my kundalini was activated, I was in an airport at the time, and I saw time slips. It's really strange, but I was just really still in one place. I was overlooking the concourse, and I was kind of meditating in a strange kind of way. I was just motionless, and I just saw time skipping all of a sudden, just like people jumping forward 20 meters or so. It was really strange. So I just wanted to know, to ask, do you think there's a correlation between one's energetic state and time fluctuation?
All right, let's take that one, Jeff. Go ahead. Yeah. And Dottie, thank you. Live
absolutely.
In the United Kingdom.
And that's a great story that he shared. You know, in most of the stories I've been talking to, people experience a time that's not related to them. He experienced his own future, which is really interesting, and then to actually relive it. And it's funny, too, right? It's something rather mundane, walking into a store and seeing a game console. But as far as your energetic state, absolutely, because what moves faster than light? Consciousness. Consciousness is faster than light. Move faster than light, you move faster than time. And so that's why I believe people who maybe we can get to the point where we can control that, and it could be that his frame of mind was allowing him to see what he was seeing inside that airport. But absolutely, I believe our frame of mind and our energetic state plays a huge role in our perception of time.
Okay, next up, let's go to Cole in Tombstone, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Cole, you're on with Jeff Belanger. Go ahead.
Okay, how you doing tonight?
Okay.
Good.
I got one for you that might kind of blow your mind a little bit. I was stationed in Germany in 1975 at a place called Panzer Kaserne, and that's where Rommel was stationed before the war started. And I was NCIC for the night in the same barracks where he had his office. And the office where we stay up all night and watch the barracks and answer the phones, the next to it is Rommel's actual headquarters office. And to take a break, one of us would go in there and lay down on the couch and sleep. And then, you know, get up a little bit later on. Well, the one night I was there, I went in and laid down on the couch. And I went to sleep. And then about 2 hours later, I got woke up by something. And the lights were off in the office. And I sat up. When I sat up, I seen a pair of boots up on the desk, and a figure of a man sitting in the chair smoking a cigar. And I kind of shook my head, and the image went away. So I went over and turned on the light, and there was nobody there, but there was cigar smoke floating through the ceiling. I thought, whoa,
wow,
wait a minute. So I thought, okay, well, maybe I seen a ghost, maybe I didn't. But I didn't say anything, and I just kind of, I said, well, that's enough sleep for me, and I went back out to the other office. Well, what really sets my hair on end is, in the morning, the colonel of the concern there, he's a non-smoker, very, doesn't smoke at all. He came in, and he went into the office, and he came back out, and he asked us, he said, all right, who's been smoking in here? And I looked at him and I said, what do you mean, sir? And he said, well, I smell cigar smoke. And that was Rommel's office, and I could have swore to God it was him.
Very interesting.
What is it about these smells that are attached to ghostly figures, Jeff?
Yeah, the ghost phenomena, there's no sense, no human sense that's immune to it. You know, people hear things, they see things, they feel or sense things, and smells are very classic, and smell is so closely tied to memory. So grandma's perfume, grandpa's stogie, candles that a family member used to use. These kind of smells that shouldn't be present and haven't been present for a long time suddenly appear and then call up memories of very specific people. We hear that again and again all over the place.
Well, let's go to Sequoia in Long Beach, California, first-time caller. Hi, Sequoia.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Obviously, this is my first time calling, but
I'm glad you got it.
KFI before.
That's okay. First time with the show. Go ahead.
Let's see here. Oh, yeah, I was going to share an experience that goes along with my question.
Sure.
I was with my sister and my aunt. We were walking around the pike, and so we were by the Queen Mary. They had to use the bathroom, and I just looked up at the for the view of the Queen Mary. I see this lady in like a gown. It wasn't like from this time, 1900s gown. And so I looked up for a few seconds, then I looked back down. Then for that split second, I looked down. I was like, wait, no one should be wearing, well, no one would be wearing.
No, they shouldn't be. Well, let me tell you, Sequoia, the haunted Queen Mary is the real deal. Jeff, you been out there?
I've been out there. Actually, that's where you and I first met years ago. First time we met in person. And I've been out there.
How long ago was that?
Oh, I don't even remember. It was probably 4 or 5 years.
We met before you were even a Jeff Belanger then.
I guess so, yeah. I was just becoming Jeff Belanger.
Yes, you were.
Although I think that's the name on my birth certificate. So I don't know. Something happened. Something along the way. But yeah, no, that's a great ship. That talk about a time warp. You step onto that ship, you're jumping right back to 1920 transatlantic ocean liners.
It is. It is haunted.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Throughout.
No doubt. Let's take maybe one more call, time permitting. Christopher in Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, Christopher. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey,
thanks
good
for taking the call.
Sure thing.
And Jeff, this is Christopher Lutz from Amityville.
Chris, how are you?
Doing good. See, I was tuned in tonight. Didn't know you were going to be on, but when I heard that you're talking about Washington D.C. and the haunting in the White House, I wanted to hear from you what you thought about as far as the all the Masonic imagery that's all over Washington D.C. and if there's any correlation with the haunting.
Okay, and we've got a minute left, Jeffrey.
Yeah, Chris. Gosh, Chris, the kid from Amityville.
He's part of the family, isn't he?
Yeah,
the Lutz family.
Yeah, the Lutz family, right. So the Masonic imagery, sure. I mean, that's throughout the city and throughout those buildings. You know, I don't know enough about that to say if there's a correlation, but I do know that where this history and where history leaves a mark, there's often hauntings.
All right, where do we get the children's book if we want our kids to read it?
You can get it online at Amazon or get it at your favorite local bookstore. And I also, quick mention, Ghost Adventures, our new season premieres September 14th on the travel.
You're having fun doing that, Jeff, I can tell.
It's great. It's all these jobs are so much fun.
And how about a website or two?
You can go to ghostvillage.com or jeffbelanger.com, and appreciate all the support over the years. And thank you, George. It was great seeing you in prison.
That was fun. Yeah. Better on the outside looking in, isn't it,
yeah,
Jeff?
Yeah, right.
I love it. Okay, thanks. That's Jeff Belanger. Website's linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, special program with Nick Redfern. We're going to be talking about his latest work, The Pyramids and the Pentagon, the government's top secret pursuit of mystical relics, ancient astronauts, lost civilizations. This is one of those classic Coast to Coast shows.